Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Wednesday. Actually, I have a hand operation tomorrow. But I want to say a few words about the current situation. Sponsored by Mishpas Savansky. As always, I don't have anybody yet for the Parshat Haftorah. We'll see what happens. I'm seeing over here the way things are developing with this war. It's like, how many months now? As I mentioned previously, Israel never has had such a long war. Even in 48, I have to modify that. In the war of 47-48, because what really happened was that right after the United Nations announced the resolution to partition Palestine into two states, a Jewish state and an Arab state, the Arabs attacked the local Palestinians. They weren't as organized, as well prepared as the Hamas is now, but they caused a lot of trouble and killed a lot of people. And that went on from the end of November of 47 until, May of 15th of 48, when Israel became a state. So it was a long period, but it wasn't the kind of formal fighting. It was sporadic. If you look what's going on over there, they caused a lot of trouble. They blocked the roads to Jerusalem and things like that. But when the 48 war started, like after a month or so, it was a ceasefire imposed by the UN. And then same thing with the second round. They fought for like 10 days or something, and then there was a ceasefire. And that's the way it continued all through 48 and early 49. It was, the amount of fighting was very short, staccato, interrupted by these ceasefires and truces and stuff like that. Which resulted, of course, in the situation that nothing was solved. You had the armistice of 1949, but the war continued, as we know, down till today. Currently, they've been fighting straight, as far as I can tell, since October, right? So now it's close to April 7th. It's going to be like 6 months. So what's today? Like the end of March, So Israel never had this before. The trouble is, it seems to me, as far as I can tell, that this is exactly what the enemy wants. That Israel should have a long, sustained fight, which is a murder on the Israeli economy. Psychologically, it's very hard on the soldiers. What about the other side, the Hamas? They trained themselves. I mean, their mentality is when you never give in, you never do anything. It's always stay on message. Stay determined your way. And the longer you hold out, the better it is for you. The reason it's taking so long is Israel cannot carpet bomb them, and can't nuke them. And they can't go in a big way. As far as I can tell, I'm not the world's greatest military expert. But there are people no less than me. Israel's fought this war very intelligently, if you're talking about having low casualties. One of the things that the other side wants is that Israel should have a lot of casualties. And, that's how they operate. Let me just see something here. That's how they operate. To them, losing people doesn't mean anything because they got a huge Arab population. So they'll get new people to replace whoever they lost. But they know, and their whole mentality of the Hamas and the Hezbollah is to psych out their followers, that if they take big casualties, it's not a big deal. You know this. They have a whole religion that if you die as a martyr, it's a good thing and all that stuff. And so, they really do. I don't doubt the sincerity of the people in the Hamas and Hezbollah and all, in thinking like that. But they also are aware that Israel's not built that way. And throughout our history, this history of Israel, they've always been very sensitive to casualties for understandable reasons. And Israel demonstrated this in the past, as we know, by giving back a lot of hostages for like one, or even for dead bodies. And that's exactly what they're trying to do now. And I can't tell from all the contradictory news stories, are they planning to do that now? I mean, I can't understand that. If Bibi does that, he's going to fall from power. Meaning, if they get back 40 hostages, which is not everybody, and they get back like 800 or something like that, Arabs, that's going to really depress the soldiers. And it's going to depress everybody, because it means the other side is winning. That's what it says to me. Why are you giving back 10 for 1? Now, I do understand this far. We have, I understand the personal human suffering of the families. And that's why you see all these demonstrations in Israel, whatever, from Israelis, who basically are saying, and the left-wing press also, I get the Haaretz because I need it for college. They're talking like, don't you see that everybody wants you to give it, just end this war and get the hostages back? Which is not true. Not everybody wants that. Matter of fact, Rove does not. Because if they do that, they lose. But the left is saying is, it doesn't matter. Just get our people back. That's all that matters. So when you have that kind of mentality, that's why they gave back a zillion people for Gilad Shalit. And that's why they want to give back a zillion people for this. They don't think, in a logical way. Now, again, I can understand the families talking like that. But if the press and the others talk like that, then they're just using this to bring down Netanyahu. You know what I'm saying? Because when it's all over, let's say he listens to them. And he gives back 1,000 people for 40 hostages. After it's over, and they said to do that, then let's say, see what a loser you are? You gave back 1,000 people 40 hostages. No, the whole thing is shalol lishma. And so the Hamas knows this, and it plays into their hands, because one of the ideas of any guerrilla warfare, as I told you many times, is to play with the mind of the enemy. Don't think that Sinwar and these other guys have not studied and closely looked at for years the Israeli mentality. They know it very well. And I'm sure they were surprised at the unity that emerged in the first half of the war. And the soldiers, as far as I can tell, still hold by this. And common sense tells you, you got to finish everybody off. You got to finish the whole Hamas off, or else it's a bracha batala. But the nature of things is that the longer this lasts, first of all, there's more pirud in Israel. That's the nature of any democracy. And that's happening. And the second thing is, and here they have a very good insight. I'm sorry to say, I very much regret this, but they have Hitler's insight. Hitler had a certain genius. He also was stupid in many ways, but there are parts of him was a genius. And one of the things he hopped on was, if you just press Jew, 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 anti-Semitism, 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 it does work. In other words, he intuited, Hitler did, Esav Simon Yaakov. Right? He intuited it. And he just played on that theme over and over and over again. And it came to trump everything else in the eyes of many, many people. Not everybody, many, many people. The world did not go to war with Hitler in order to fight against anti-Semitism. They went to war against Hitler for political reasons, you know? He attacked Russia. England felt threatened. You know, things like that. America was bombed at Pearl Harbor. And Hitler declared war on America. So, had nothing to do with the Jews. Why would it? I mean, would you go and go fight a war for someone else? You know what I'm saying? And so, the Hamas sees that the longer the war lasts, the bigger is the anti-Semitism. It's a very interesting insight. And I'm sorry to say, it's not incorrect. As far as I can tell, around the world, the longer this lasts, the more the anti-Semitism increases. They say it's because of the civilian casualties in Gaza and all the rest of it. That might be true to some degree, but nobody puts the blame on the civilian casualties in Gaza on the Hamas, which is, except Biden, by the way. I want to make that clear, which is very important. But nobody talks like that. You know what I'm saying? All the press, all of our intelligent journalists and stuff like that, and all these people in Congress who followed, you know, put their hand up to the wind, see the way the wind is blowing, especially Democrats. Not that I'm, you know, attacking the Democrats per se, but a bunch of them. They're simply saying, oh, it's terrible. Israel has to stop this. It's atrocities, all the rest of it. Why didn't you blame the Hamas? You see? Because at the end of the day, so much of life is about who you blame. You understand? It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way things are. Is who gets blamed? The smart politicians are the ones who are able to duck the blame. Not that they fix anything or don't fix anything. And it's possible for a politician to fix something, and then the other side goes and very cleverly spins it in such a way that they gets the blame, even though he fixed it. It's a funny part of our political system, or the world political systems. So basically, it's all about who gets the blame. Do you understand? I'm telling you something very important. Thousands of people have died, civilians and all that. Okay, let's say that's true. Who? Why? Who's at fault? So the thing is, Hamas keeps just, you know, and they're... I hope I didn't lose anything here. Yeah. My phone is going playing games here. But I'll say it again. You know, the other side stays on message, and Israel does not, it seems to me. Why don't you hear each time that, people got killed today in a hospital in Gaza. It's the Arabs' fault. Babies got killed. It's the Arabs' fault. You don't hear them talking like that, do you? Either you say it's Israel's fault or something else. Why doesn't the American news talk like that, right? In Europe, the news, like the BBC and those others, I think that the staff is all half Arab or something like that. But, why don't you hear this in the American media? The answer is they don't want to be hurt by the Hamas people and terrorists and all this. The journalists don't want to be hurt. And so by Arabs who'll take revenge on them. So what kind of, you know, systems do we have going on up here? But we allow it to be. We don't have this kind of, you know, message control in which every day you say, yes, it's terrible today. Another 100 people, civilians got killed. It's the Hamas fault. It's funny. I'll tell you again, it's all about not what happens, but who gets blamed. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that two things. First of all, you have Esau son of Yaakov. So people are just going to be inclined to blame Israel. And second of all, you have the anti-Israel narrative of the extreme sort in which, and you hear this all, at least I see it, in which the very legitimacy of Israel is challenged every single day. And the bad guys are using this to reinforce this challenging of Israel's basic legitimacy. You know, that's why you hear about decolonialization and, dispossession and all this. No, there's things of general interest to those who study the Arab-Israeli problem are now brought front and center in such a way that if any senator or congressman says, I'm for it, why are you in favor of the colonial dispossessors of Palestine ever since 1900 or whatever, something like that? So in other words, they play a dual track system. On the one end, you're criticizing Israel for doing something, you know, right now, hurting people in Rafah or whatever. But even though you're using an argument of contemporary events, the argument is really grounded in the fundamental argument that literally nothing Israel can do is right, because Israel itself is illegitimate, and the whole Messias doesn't count. Therefore, Israel should go out of business. And when you have it that way, even if I told you, if I proved to you, as we do over and over again, no, it's not true that Israeli soldiers raped Arab women. No, it's not true that Israel bombed that hospital. Remember all that? It doesn't matter, because the other side still is, even if it's not true, even if it's not true, Israel's still wrong because of their etzem metzius is wrong. You know what I'm saying? You can't win that argument if you go into the... But it's interesting. I really... In other words, no matter what you do, you're illegitimate. It is lahavdil. Suppose I say like this. Hitler built good highways, which he did. I said, but I don't care because the whole Hitler thing is wrong. It's evil. You see what I'm saying? You use argument when argument works. And when argument doesn't work, then you use, you know, basic philosophy that Israel's all illegitimate and that the Arabs there. Now, a third part of what the Hamas does is that as long as they keep the war going, the longer they do, and the more they, cause trouble, that makes it more and more popular among the Arabs, especially among the Palestinians. Why? They're actually doing something. Israel's been dealing with the Palestinians, obviously, from day one. As you and I know, they did the Oslo Agreement back in 1993 or 5, whatever it was. And the Oslo Agreement didn't turn out the way the Arabs wanted it. I don't know if it turned out the way Israel wanted it, but it certainly turned out the way Arabs wanted it. Because they imagined at that time, that was when Yitzhak Rabin was the prime minister. They imagined at that time it's going to lead to a Palestinian state, which, of course, they hoped then would lead to the end of the Israeli state. But for one reason or the other, things didn't work out the way either side expected, particularly the Palestinians. And Ada Yom Hazeh has not led to a Palestinian state. So to Palestinian Authority, and as you know, Israel goes in every day, even as I'm speaking right now. They have to fight these terrorists that are inside, the Arab, the West Bank. A guy in my show told me yesterday he's going to, he's leaving tomorrow or whenever. He's going to be in Afula. Afula is like 9 or 10 miles away, I think, from Jenin, which is where Israel last night was having a whole battle against these terrorists. But they're still able to go in and fight these terrorists because of the nature of the Oslo Agreement, which allowed Israel to do that. And so it didn't turn out the way the Arabs wanted it. And the Palestinians know this very well. And they're like of two minds about this. But they would like to get a full-fledged state. Al-Karkam and Shlobato Vosim shall Israel. And they haven't been able to do it yet. And the PLO has been working on the political process now for 30 years. Which is not a dumb thing to do, because anytime they win the political process, which they've not done yet, then Israel's messed over majorly. If they ever get a state that Israel can't go into, and they can go and attack us, we can't attack them, then Israel can hack the Tsars. And now this Hamas group looks like they're, they don't care about any of that, and they're fighting and they're killing Israelis. And the result is that, if I was a regular Arab guy and I hated Israel and all that, I'd say, I'm pro Hamas. And so one of the reasons they're doing this is to win the next elections, whenever they'll have next elections. Because that guy in charge, Abu Mazen, is late 80s. And then Israel really is messed over. Because what if the Palestinians democratically elect Hamas to be the leader? That means the Palestinians are voting for somebody who believes only in the destruction. They say openly, they believe only in the destruction of Israel. That's the only solution to the Palestinian problem. The Arab-Israeli conflict is the destruction of Israel. And what if the Arabs all vote that way? So then what does the United States do? You know what I'm saying? What does the United States do? This was the problem with Gaza. Now, they did that when 2006, 2007, when they voted them in. So they're voting for somebody. And, with an election, all you need is 51%. So they're voting for somebody who says there can't be any real peace with the other side. And the only solution is your destruction. So let's say, for argument's sake, that this war ends tomorrow and they have elections in 6 months. And they voted in Sinwar, something like that. So what happens? right? Does the world say like this? Oh, that's not a constructive attitude. And you voted for a party that doesn't believe in peace. If we're not going to back it. You know, and I know, they're not going to say that. They're going to say, all right, this is who the Palestinians are. This is what they hold. We have to take that into account. And let's move forward. And Israel says, like, how can you move forward when somebody wants to kill me? And they say it. The Esav, son of Yaakov, then kicks in. And he said, no, work something out. You understand? Work something out. The United Nations, all these countries always use the language, peace is better than war. Is that true? Is peace always better than war? I mean, human history doesn't show that. The Allies went to war against Hitler. They didn't say peace is better than war. You see? The bad guys say war is better than peace. The good guys say peace is better than war. Well, then the bad guys always win. You understand? If you always say that peace is better than anything, you're going to lose sooner or later. Because once I know you're hooked to a particular policy, that's like trapping animals. Once you know that they're going to act in a certain way, all you have to do is then design your strategy, take advantage of the fact that they can't maneuver, and then work out something, and you'll defeat them that way. That goes on all throughout history. I mean, that's just logic. That's how people catch animals. I know if you do this and this and this, the bird will do that and that, and so I organize in such a way, or the fish will do that and that, and I organize in such a way that you catch them knowing their weakness. It's necessary in order to win not to be stuck in any kind of position. But, you know, they don't operate that way, do they? And so, like I said before, I hate to say it, but the Arab strategy, the Hamas, it works. How is it possible that people, politicians, should support something that ends up benefiting Hamas? British politicians, American politicians, French politicians, German politicians. Because you choose your arguments. You say, I'm not out to help Hamas. I just want to save the civilians. But that's going to allow Hamas to continue. And then they'll start the war all over again as soon as they get a chance to hit Israel again. And they say they will, right? Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, you have to think about the civilians. In other words, there's weak thinking on the part of somebody. And the Arabs know this. I'm talking about the Hamas. And so, you know, we're in a bad spot. Now, for its part, I do understand why Israel's taking so long, because you want to reduce your casualties. As far as I can tell, Israel, from a very professional military point of view, has operated very impressively, because they only lost two. Now, I'm not, you know me, I'm not knocking the importance of every Israeli casualty that are wounded. We all know that. But if you're looking from a military point of view, to have a 6-month war with a lot of fighting and all these tunnels and all the junk, and to lose 250 or whatever, 260, that's a very small number. Okay? But that's because Israel being very careful how they do the fighting. It's like three ways of doing it. One is to do what Israel's doing. The other way is to do like the Russians do, just bomb the hell out of everybody, which they can't do. That's how the Russians operate. And the third one is, you know, to go in like some kind of a mass assault and just take a lot of casualties, which I think the Americans did to their regret in Iraq. And, you know, and Israel doesn't want to do that for understandable reasons. Then the enemy really would have a field day. Then they really would be triumphant. So, what do you do if you're in charge of Israel and you have the responsibility to try to win? That's why they say they need a lot of time. That's why they say they need a lot of time. I understand that. But time is something you don't have. It's the nature of the world. Especially the nature of Esav, son of Yaakov. Is they won't give them the time. And there's also the idea that when I know you're weak, then I really get down on your back. It's like the sharks going after the blood. Since they know that if they criticize, you know, let me put it this way. Russia's doing a lot worse than Ukraine. And yeah, there is a lot of press behind it, but nobody pays attention. We all know in general Russia's doing bad things in Ukraine. And let's move on. What's for breakfast? Because Russia doesn't give a darn. You see? And there is nothing that America or the press can do to Russia. There's nothing they can do. If they threaten them, Russia said, we'll nuke you. Yeah, let's go to war. And so once you know that your complaints have no hashpa, you don't complain so much. Like little children with parents. When you know that when you make a complaint, it has a roshan, then that just encourages you to make more complaints. And everybody knows existentially, the nature of Israel is that they're exposed to the complaints. So the only way I see out of here is for Israel to complete the operation. But it sounds, the way they're talking, it's going to take months. So that's a tart to the sasri, because they just don't have those months, especially since it's combined with the American election cycle. So how's this going to work? I'm looking today. I see Trump even says, Donald Trump warned that Israel is losing much of its support in the international community over the Gaza war, calling it for it to swiftly conclude its military campaign. Yeah, I get this. But why is Israel losing all support? Now, why? They're fighting the bad guys. You see, the other guys are of such a nature that they don't allow any criticism to deflect them. Does the Hamas go around apologizing what they did? They just forge ahead. You know, saying they just say we're continuing this. The Israelis are the occupation; and they're the bad guys, and it kind of works. So we live in an olam of sheker. It's unfortunate, but it's necessary for us to persevere. In that context, this business of the drafting the yeshiva guys, it becomes very divisive. It's a real problem, especially when the frum use this overblown rhetoric. What was Avad Yosef's son said? I guess we're all going to leave the country. They ain't leaving no country. Really? Where's 100,000, 150,000 yeshiva guys going to go? I'm serious. Where are they going to go? The only country, Ulai Efshar, is America. I'm asking you the following question. England's going to take in 150,000 yeshiva guys? And more? I'm just talking about the ones learning. France is going to take them in? Spain? You get what I'm saying? I don't think America would either. Slowly but surely, America's moving to the point where they say it's too much immigration, especially illegal immigration coming in. They're moving slowly in that direction. Trump and all the rest of it. They're going to take in 150,000 yeshiva guys. And others say like this, we'd rather die than go in the army. Really? You'd rather die? Is that real? No, if you're from, you use overblown rhetoric. It's just the way it goes. I don't know what the future is going to be at the moment, but we have plenty to daven for. I actually have to go off and give a class right now. So I just wanted to bloviate a little and share some of my thoughts about the situation. Again, always with the wonderful support of Mishpacha Stavansky. And I'll see if we get anybody for the Parsha of Torah this week. And meanwhile, I wish you all a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.